Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. MyLowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
When you joined the police department, did it ever enter your mind that you joined because you wanted to kill somebody?
No, it was more of preventive. Like if I could stop it from happening, that was kind of my mindset. It was never that I wanted to have to shoot someone, but if I could prevent maybe the next 9/11, that was always, for whatever reason, in my mind. I knew that the chances were that like slim to none, but I guess if the opportunity presented itself, I wanted to be the one.
Right. And you can tell, ladies and gentlemen, that I didn't tell him I was going to ask him the question. And I do that on purpose because I want to see the real reaction. Hey, guys. Welcome back to the next episode of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. I'm your host, Murph. Pretty obvious, right? And you see what shirt I got on today? If you haven't checked this out yet, the Anti-Hero Podcast with Brent and Tyler over there, good people. They got a media company running now called Counterculture. And as a matter of fact, we have one of the members of their media company with us today. This young man sitting on the screen here, this is an individual who has been a police officer for 18 years now. He's in a Northwest Indiana suburb of the infamous Chicago. And he's going to have, we got some great stories in coming up today. He's an interdiction officer. He's a canine officer. Can't wait to get into stories and some other things that we're going to talk about. But you know, it's all going to be good. So ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Kenny Williams. Kenny, brother, thank you so much for coming on the show.
No, it's my privilege and honor to be here. I appreciate you for having me.
No, man, it's exciting. That's what I do. I was a cop for 38 years. Now I live vicariously for what you real cops do. And you know, of that 38 years, 26 years as a fed, that's not really a real cop, to be quite honest with you. But I had 12 years before that where I was a real cop, so kind of makes up for it. You know how we are. Everybody looks down to feds, so that kind of breaks down a lot of doors. It always did when I was a fed, when they found out that you were a local guy in uniform.
Yeah, it seems that the groups that I work with, if they're a former cop, they have a little more of understanding of police work than if they came straight out of college and became a fed.
Yep. And, you know, I work with some great feds, but, and this is off top of it. I didn't plan on talking about this, but that's the cool thing about having your own podcast. You talk about what you want to, right? Right. But quite honestly, I preferred working with state and locals afterwards. Maybe it was because of my upbringing. But they, believe it or not, state and locals always had better equipment than the feds had. I could call state and locals at 2:30 in the morning, and they'd be out by 3. You call the fed 2:30 in the morning, he'd say, I'll see you at coffee. All right, all you fed brothers and sisters, I love you. So don't send me hate mail, okay? You can send it. It's okay. It's all one big family. But Kenny, we're going to have some fun today, brother. I mentioned to Kenny that we have a section here called our Small Town Police Blotter, and that's where we talk about some of the stupid things that criminals do out there. And, you know, I've got to read the disclaimer here so I don't get sued. This is a show about crime. We talk about bad people. We talk about bad people doing bad things to good people. We take our stories very seriously, but we never want to miss the opportunity to have a nice little laugh at the expense of some of these crazy criminals that are out there. And I hesitate because I'm trying to clean up my language, y'all. So bear with me here. Kenny has agreed. He's up in Northwest Indiana, as I mentioned. So we have a story for him. So Kenny, take it away, brother.
So this occurred in 2019. An Indiana man accidentally shot himself in the penis and scrotum. And then beyond that, he got charged for carrying a handgun without a permit. So not only does he get to go to, the hospital for some pretty gruesome injuries, then he gets charged on top of it.
No.
We'll scroll down a little bit. But according to the police, Jones suffered an accidental self-inflicted gunshot injury while walking around the street around 6:45 a.m. During the hospital interview, Jones told the cops that he had an unholstered high point. Well, that's where you went wrong right there. As soon as you have a high point, it's a problem from the get-go. And he tells them,
Can you say Saturday Night Special?
Yeah. It slipped out of his waistband, and as he tried to grab it to put it back in his waistband, he pulled the trigger. Jones stated the gun did not belong to him. He was waiting to purchase the firearm, which is probably not a good idea at this point. And for some reason, they decided to attach photographs that I did not open. But
oh, yeah. Yeah. Don't want to see that.
No.
I mean, you just wonder what he was really grabbing when he was trying to adjust the thing in his pants.
If he... not used to carrying a gun and just to go pull up your pants, I guess. I don't know. Maybe forget it's there. Who knows?
Oh, my goodness. I got to tell you this. Back in I started law enforcement in 75, and my best friend back then, we shared an apartment that we lived in, and he was getting ready to go out to a club one night, and his nickname was Tripod. And you can just figure out, you come up with whatever you will, how he got that nickname, but you're probably right. But we were going to go to a club one night, and I was over at my girlfriend's house picking her up, and he was back, and I get a phone call that said that he just shot himself. I'm like, what? Because you're thinking suicide, right?
Yeah.
What he did is he had on his tight jeans to go out clubbing in the 70s, and he put his .38 down, revolver down in the front of his pants, and then he bent his leg up to tie his shoes or whatever, and the thing went off. It missed anything important. But it missed the femoral artery, which was the big thing, but it went in up close to the crotch and came out above the knee. Did not hit anything vital. They didn't even keep him in the hospital, but you know how they cleaned the wound? They took a rifle cleaning rod.
Oh my God.
And you ran it all the way down. Oh my gosh.
I couldn't imagine.
I had forgotten all about that story until you mentioned the story, but oh my goodness.
That was probably more painful than being shot, I bet. Jesus.
Oh, it just makes you cringe. I'm still wiggling in my seat here.
Yeah. Like I grabbed my legs when you said that. Just I felt it.
It's a man thing, everybody. You just kind of feel it whenever somebody else suffers something like that. All right. So there's never a shortage of stupid criminals here in Florida. Just so you know, Kenny, I try to teach my kids and grandkids to be leaders, not followers. And here in Florida, we try to be the leader of the dumb criminals. I don't know if you've ever heard of Florida Man. It's a real thing. So this one comes to us from Melbourne, Florida, which is one of my favorite places over in Brevard County. My wife and I, we love to go over to Satellite Beach and hang out, which is right there next to Melbourne. But in this case, there's three men were arrested last week when they were caught taking a sledgehammer to the parking lot of a seemingly abandoned building. And this is according to the Melbourne PD. In an affidavit, police say that an off-duty officer was inside the building at 650 North Apollo Boulevard, which happens to be also listed online as the Melbourne City Police Department. They heard a banging outside. This happened in April, same month. We're recording this in late April. The officer went to the window. He spotted three men taking turns with a small sledgehammer. Police explained that the trio was breaking up the curb of the parking lot in front of the property's entrance. As a result, all three were taken into custody. One of the men, identified as Daniel Cabral, 36 years old, and certainly old enough to know better than to do this crap, later told investigators that the group had been trying to skateboard on the concrete bank of the entryway at the police department. Daniel stated the group was trying to make a pathway to approach the concrete bank, and they were taking turns with a sledgehammer to remove a section of the curb. They thought the building was abandoned. I don't know, is there a sign on the front of it that says Melbourne PD? Probably. The other two suspects, Jake Yanko, 23, and Nicholas Hansen, 28, all old enough to know better than to do this. They told the same story. In total, the damage to the curb was estimated at $250. All three men were faced a charge of criminal mischief and were released on a bond of $500. Now, that doesn't compare to the story in Indiana. but it just shows you.
Yeah, they're both.
There's probably police cars sitting out there. You know, Melbourne's not a small little town like I worked in with 30, 40 cops. It's a good size agency over there.
And wow.
Melbourne could be a little tough too. So thank you for playing along with that, Kenny. I know it's kind of silly, but I enjoy doing it. And it starts the show off with a laugh. So I think it's all good. So if you're wondering how Kenny and I met here, we've got a guest coming on the show here soon in early June by the name of Tom Rizzo. You might recognize the name. He's going to be right now having scheduled as episode 199. And I think Kenny, you're going to be, let me go over here to my master list because that sounds important, 197. So it'll be 2 weeks after your episode comes out. Rizzo is on a TV show called, he's a co-host on a TV show called On Patrol Live. And this guy's a stud. I mean, I've never been a big muscle-bound guy Rizzo is.
Especially like for an old man. Especially for an old man. He's built.
Oh, listen to you, man. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to have him come and whip my butt. But anyway, and the other thing is, I heard about Kenny through these guys, through the Anti-Hero podcast, through their Counterculture Media Company. And I said, you know what? I'd love to have these guys on, especially somebody with a lot of experience out there that has some great stories to tell. And Kenny does. Kenny has his own podcast. It's called Beyond the Barrel Podcast. So we're going to talk about that throughout the show. But, yep, there's his sign in the back. He's got the cool neon lights, and he's got the machine gun up there. And originally when I heard Beyond the Barrel, I'm thinking a barrel of whiskey or something.
That's kind of the double pun in there. I was a bartender before I was a cop, and kind of bringing it full circle, you know, beyond the barrel of the gun, beyond the barrel of the, like, the whiskey barrel, sitting around having drinks after work.
There you go. But once I saw your logo, I thought, well, I guess I got that wrong. But hey, I didn't. Turns out it didn't. And he's even got his shirt on there. Look at you, brother. I like that shirt. And you know, this was a free shirt from the guys.
I'll mail you a coin and a shirt.
And oh, the coin. Wait till you guys. We're going to talk about that. I'm going to show you his coin later on. But let me just say I'm honored. Truly honored.
Never thought I had this opportunity when I made that coin, to be honest with you.
Well, thank you very much, man. That's very flattering. It's well, we're talking about it now. It's a square coin, and what I'm going to do is you're going to see a picture of it here in just a second. There are five law enforcement officers on that coin. There's a guy named Kiki Camarena, which if you follow me anytime at all, you know who Kiki is because we honor his memory every opportunity we get. There's these two guys named Pinion Murphy that might be Murph here. I guess he couldn't come up with anybody else put on that dang coin. Then, let's see, Robbie
Bishop.
Yeah, Robbie Bishop, who was a police officer in Georgia when I was stationed in Atlanta, who was an interdiction officer, who was extremely aggressive. It was extremely successful. Got killed in the line of duty. You okay if we just dedicate today's show 100%. To the memory of Robbie Bishop? He was a police officer in Villarica, Georgia at the time. I actually have his end of watch date on here. It was January 20th of 1999. So Robbie, rest in peace, brother. And then the fifth individual on there is a gentleman named Charlie Hanger, who's with Oklahoma State Patrol. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Got some great friends in Oklahoma, man. We've had a couple of them as guests on here. Those guys are a hoot to hang out with and a hoot to have on the show. And I'll ask you a little bit more about them as we get going here. But just want to point that out now, who the five figures are on that coin. I've never had one with my face on there. So thank you, man. Thank you very much.
It was kind of a brainstorm, and I was like, man, who could I put on here that every interdiction or every cop kind of looks up to? And those were the five that came to mind immediately. So.
Wow. That's an honor. Well, let's get into your story today here, Kenny. If you would, we always ask our guests, where did you grow up? What were your family dynamics? Did you come from a law enforcement family, brothers and sisters? Did you play sports in high school? Did you graduate high school? Because I hope you did. But I know you did because you graduated college as well. So let me just turn it over to you for a few minutes and tell us about your background, please.
Born and raised in the same area that I'm working in. Growing up, my grandpa owned a trucking company. We come from like a very mill-oriented family. My grandparents came here from Pittsburgh when the coal mine started to close down for like the aspirations of the great steel mills of, you know, the Northwest or Midwest. Mm-hmm. My dad worked at the mills early in my life. My mom and my dad were married for 3 months. So I was conceived, they got married, and before I was even born, they were divorced.
Oh, wow. That's a quick one.
Yeah. My dad got custody of me when I was like 3 months old. My mom had some, and still does have some, substance abuse issues. And so I think going back, you look in early 80s to have a father get custody of a child is unheard of. So yeah, kind of raised by my dad, my grandparents most of the time. Still went and saw my mom, but I was kind of like once a week and every other weekend or something like that, like whatever the courts had worked out. So I didn't have a lot of influence there. But yeah, man, go through high school, played sports, wasn't that great. I was very little. I was like 150 pounds and I was fast. So I ran track and I played football and just got beat up in football. That's all I really did. I didn't really contribute much unless there was speed involved, and the speed was because I didn't want to get hit. So I was just, I don't know if I was really that fast or just terrified to get hit, so I was just running.
Understood.
Yeah, and going through high school, I really didn't know what I was going to do. I had some aspirations to be a teacher because of, I felt like if I could impact someone that maybe was going through like a childhood where one of their parents had some addiction issues, maybe I could guide them and show them a better route, better path than falling down that same, I guess, generational addict type life. But then September 11th happened, and when I was a freshman in college, and it just changed my perspective. And I wanted to go to the military, and my grandparents did not want me to go. And I kind of used the excuse of, well, I need to pay for college, so they'll pay for college. I'm going to go. Well, then they stepped up and they said, no, we'll pay for college. And I was like, well, I don't really have a fucking excuse now. So I will, I'm going to go be a cop. I had some buddies that were starting to get down that avenue of law enforcement. And I was talking to them a lot and went and got changed my degree from education to criminal justice. And yeah.
There you go.
Kind of went through that. Yep.
Yeah. I got your degree in criminal justice and corrections.
No, just, public environment affairs, and then Korea. I don't remember, but yeah, criminal justice. I don't think it's corrections. It's just criminal justice, like a blanket degree.
Gotcha. Now, we're going to talk about you. You actually did become a teacher, and we're going to talk about that just a little bit later. So that never actually went away, which is good. And you know what? I want to ask you a question right now that I've been asking lately to every police officer, law enforcement professional that I bring on here. So 9/11 motivated you to either go in the military, or we understand how you ended up in the police. And thank God for your grandparents. They're taking care of you. That's very admirable of them. When you joined the police department, did it ever enter your mind that you joined because you wanted to kill somebody?
No, it was more of preventive. If I could stop it from happening, that was kind of my mindset. It was never that I wanted to have to shoot someone, but if I could prevent maybe the next 9/11, that was always, for whatever reason, in my mind. I knew that the chances were that like slim to none, but I guess if the opportunity presented itself, I wanted to be the one.
Right. And you can tell, ladies and gentlemen, that I didn't tell him I was going to ask him the question. And I do that on purpose because I wanted to see the real reaction. And I was a cop for 38 years. I know cops all around the world. In fact, I'm interviewing an Australian cop this evening. I have not met a single cop yet anywhere in the world that said they became a police officer to kill somebody. So all that BS rhetoric that you hear out there, that defund the police, don't listen to that junk. That's very self-serving individuals, many of whom are being paid to say things like that. That's, my opinion is, if you don't like the way it is here in the United States, go to a third world country and try it out. I think you'll probably want to come back. So, okay, just want to get that out of the way, because if you haven't figured it out yet, Murphy is very pro-law enforcement and pro-military. So there's no law enforcement in your background at all? None of your family members?
My dad did a reserve thing for a few years where it's basically like a volunteer, but it wasn't very impactful in my decision-making.
Okay. And Kenny doesn't know I'm going to say this either. I don't do gotcha stuff, and I will never do anything to embarrass a law enforcement professional. But here's a young man, or at a very young age, grew up with challenges before you were even born. Your parents are divorced. And you told us your mom had addiction problems. Well, how easy would it have been, or how many times do we see people who would use that as a crutch, as an excuse for failure, to become an alcoholic, to become a drug addict, to become whatever, a criminal? But here's a young man that we're talking to today who didn't let his circumstances dictate his future. And I love that theme, because the lady that's out right now, the show that came out this week, Carla Castellanos, if you haven't heard her story, go listen to it, because she's another lady who lost part of an arm as a Border Patrol agent in a horrific accident that should never have happened. You want to talk about motivational and inspirational? Go listen to Carla. And this episode is going to come out a few weeks after Carla's. But I just get so excited about talking to her. The people like her, like Kenny here, motivate me. When I feel, you know, I'm an old man now. When I feel sorry for myself, I don't want to go to the gym. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And then you look at these folks that are out there that could have, I don't know, legitimately had a reason to give up. By God, they didn't. I mean, you folks just motivate the shit out of me. And there we go with the first curse word. How many minutes are we in here? Well, we made it almost 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's not bad.
So I may edit that out. We'll see. And speaking of going to the gym, I told Kenny, I was telling him I went to the gym this morning, and I actually wore this shirt to the gym just to get some reaction from people, because people always come up and say, oh, I know that podcast. And I told him he's lucky he's not here in the room with me because it was pretty sweaty when I put it on. But I mean, I love these guys. They're hilarious.
They're great.
The Anti-Hero Podcast, everybody. And so I worked with a trainer, this guy I've been working with for a long time, Nick, and he puts up with my crap, and he doesn't take it easy on you. He works your butt off. But today he put me on one of those round rubber balls to sit on. And then you have to walk your legs out so that you end up with your back and your head on the ball, and you're using your legs to hold your hips up, and you're doing these different exercises with dumbbells and so forth. And it's like, he's okay, now sit up. So I come back up, I roll back up on the ball, hand him the dumbbells. And he's like, well, just sit there for a minute. And I'm sitting there, the next thing you know, Murph just rolls right off the table. I fell out on the floor. He's laughing, I'm laughing. People stand around trying not to laugh, but it was funny.
It's awesome.
Oh, yeah. When I joined DEA, there was a guy I worked with, Kenny Peterson. Love the guy to death. Learned more from him than anybody else on the job as far as DEA. And his saying was, don't lose your sense of humor. Every time you start to get ticked off about something, he's like, hey, don't lose your sense of humor. And that's the way it is. You know? Yeah. Well, did I look like an idiot? I sure did. And I knew it. And they knew it. So why not have some fun with it?
Yeah. Okay. I feel like if you could laugh at yourself, it makes life a little bit easier than taking everything so seriously.
Absolutely. Now, Kenny did further his enforcement, his law enforcement education through a DEA school. And I got to give DEA a shout out here. We call it the DUCA school, the DUCA, the Drug Unit Commander's Academy. How long did you go to that school? And what year was it, if you remember?
It's probably 3 years ago, three or four years ago. It was my class. It's like DUCA number 82. I don't know where they're at now, but so like that, just to give anyone that's been through perspective. And I think it's like 11 or 12 day school. It's a leadership school that's focusing on running units and NARC units and those types of things. And yeah, kind of opened your eyes to a lot of this stuff that I didn't even know the DEA had. It was good. I liked it.
Yeah. It has an outstanding rating. I think it's DEA's, it's not equivalent to, but it's their answer to the FBI's National Academy, which is fantastic. I think that's admirable too, but you know, gotta love DEA there. So what year did you join the police department?
I got hired in 2007.
And that's the same department you're still with?
Correct.
Do they have their own police academy? Are they big enough to have their own academy, or did you go to a regional academy? What'd you do?
Yeah, a regional academy. So in Indiana, there's, I don't know if maybe Indy has their own academy, but a lot of them, there's like one near Indianapolis, and then there's like five or six satellite academies throughout the state. But I don't know. I'm sure Indianapolis has their own big, because yeah, they're a huge department. I'm sure they have their own academy.
How big is your department?
About 70.
70 sworn?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. My department was 35, and now it's probably down to 22.
Wow.
This is in southern West Virginia. But you had a blast, and you learned the job because you didn't have other people to rely on. I mean, if it was a murder, you called the detectives out, or you know, on the major capital crimes. But we had maybe one, maybe two murders a year. Some years, no murders in the city, so it's a nice place. Good place to learn the job, though.
You learn everything. You know, you learn everything from the patrol aspect, and you even have to do some smaller investigations and those types of things as your patrolman, because just manpower doesn't allow for everything to, you know, go take the initial report and then turn it over to the Bureau.
Exactly right. Did the academy you went to, was that a live-in academy, or did you go home at nighttime?
No, I went home.
That's bad. You need to stay there and suffer. I mean, learn. You know, the old saying, misery loves company, right?
Yeah. Yep.
How long was your academy?
16 or 18 weeks. We were talking about that the other day, and I can't remember, because I think right now it's at 15 or 17. But when I went through, they had added an additional week for a short period of time. So I think it was 18 weeks.
How many people in your class, and are they from all over the state?
Yeah, mainly the Northwest area, but there was about 50 people in the class, and they used to run 3 a year, and I think that they do 2 a year now.
Yeah. Did they make you do PT and all that kind of stuff?
Every day.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? What a great networking opportunity, right?
Especially if you go to the one downstate, it's guys from all over that you probably never see again, some of them, or at least here, like most of us stay in touch and we kind of go through the ranks together too. Like we're all kind of on that same, so maybe not same agency, but definitely same, like, all right, time on. So promotions and people going in administrations and those types of things kind of happen across the board with all of us.
Nice. Did tell us a funny story that happened while you were in the academy. It doesn't have to be about you. It could be about any of the guys. There's always hilarious things that go on in the academy.
Yeah, there's so many. I'm just trying to think of one that's like maybe PG or so.
Well, this is an explicit podcast, so you're welcome to tell whatever you got. You just talked about a guy getting shot in the you know what.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm trying to think. I think one of the funniest ones is there's a guy in our academy that couldn't swim, and you have to basically swim. So they make you jump off a high diving board and swim across. Well, when the instructor wasn't looking, he like got wet and walked around and made it look like he swam across. So it's like I was like, how did you pull this off? But he pulled it off. So I don't know.
Nobody ratted him out.
No, not one person.
What's that saying that Clint Eastwood used to say in the military? Something, adapt and overcome. There you go. So when you come out now, you're back at your PD. Are you with a training officer for a little while?
Yeah, I had two field training officers, and it was great. I had one that was super knowledgeable, but more on the conservative side. But when it came to case law and stuff, it was like squared away. And then I had another one that knew his shit, but also was very active. Like he wanted to go out there and find bad guys, and it laid a great foundation for me, just showing me how to go out there and be a proactive cop. Where if you don't have that as a new guy, if you don't have an FTO that wants to be active and go and show how you do, you know, how to find bad guys, like it's an art that it's going to take you time to learn on your own. So I had an accelerated experience with that because of my FTOs.
That's great to hear. There was, I was interviewed on a different podcast earlier this week and was talking about my first experience with, I was riding with a training officer had a little tax shift from 7 p.m. to 3 a.m. and got run off the road by a drunk driver at like 2 o'clock in the morning. A really long story short, she'd left the scene of the accident. She actually sideswiped a car in front of me, ran me up on the sidewalk. So I turned around, got her pulled over. And she was the wife of a very prominent attorney in our town whose brother was a district court judge, and refused the breathalyzer, which back then was an automatic revocation of your driver's license for a year. The law firm would hire off-duty officers to serve papers and things like that. So it was a nice off-duty job, easy off-duty job. Had a couple of sergeants come to me and say, hey, this is my off-duty gig here. Can you see your way itself clear to do anything? And I'm a rookie. I'm like, sure, whatever you guys need me to do, just tell me. Well, could you reduce the charges to public intoxication and reckless driving? She gets 6 points on her license, pays a few $100 fine, and doesn't go to jail. So sure. So I go into the city court, and typically the chief is there. He's not there that day. A detective is sitting there, a guy named Roger. The city attorney didn't show up, so I'm presenting my own case as a rookie. And so the judge says, okay, Sir Murphy, what you got? I said, well, Judge, before we start, could I ask the court to consider reducing the charges? And I mentioned it, and he's like, oh, there's no way. Absolutely not. We are not reducing this charge. You charged this individual with drunk driving and the whole thing, leaving the scene of an accident, blah, blah, blah. And so I go through and present my case, and, you know, it's pretty cut and dry. At the end, he looks over at the attorney. It's another attorney from that same law firm who hasn't said a word. And the judge looks over at him, and he says, his name was Norris. He said, Norris, what do you think? I don't think that's enough evidence to convict anybody of drunk driving. I think we're going to reduce these charges to reckless driving and drunk in public. And I know my chin hit the floor. I'm looking over to the detective. He's laughing at me. The judge is like, let me introduce you to Officer Murphy. He's the newest addition to our police department. He's got a bright future here with the city. Can somebody come and pull this thing out of my rear end? Oh, just funny stories that happened out there.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So we got you on patrol. And how long did you have an FTO before you were out by yourself solo?
2 to 3 months.
And of course, you got straight days, Monday through Friday, weekends off.
Yeah, right.
How long did you stay on patrol before you got interested in other things?
So in the academy, it piqued my interest. It's crazy because the academy is 18 weeks long, and there's like a 3-hour block about criminal interdiction. And it was something that I was like hooked on. We just didn't have that at my agency. But my first 5 years, that's all I really did, was just general patrol stuff. And then I was offered an opportunity after 5 years on to do a part-time interdiction thing and kind of ran with it.
All right. If you would explain to our listeners, what do you mean by interdiction?
I'm a sports fan, so the best analogy I could come up with all the time when people ask me is like, if you're a defensive player, an offensive player has the ball, interdiction is similar to intercepting a pass. Like you're, and interdiction can be in many forms. You could have highway, which what I do, or you could have parcel, you could have, I guess, boat, airplane, all these types of different interdiction styles or techniques or avenues, I guess. Mine is just specific to the highway.
Mm-hmm. And so you're taking, like when you're a patrol officer, you're on a beat, you're assigned an area responsibility, and you're being, you're out there patrolling, looking for things, but you're being very reactive because when a call comes in, you're reacting to that call. Whereas when you're looking for things proactive, you're being proactive, right?
Correct.
So that would, in my book, that's how I kind of picture interdiction. And are you working, is there a major highway that goes through your jurisdiction or?
Yeah, we have theoretically, we have four major highways. We have I-65 that runs north and south. We have 94 that theoretically connects Chicago to Detroit. And then we have 80 and 90 that come together by us outside of Chicago that run together.
And that's all within the city jurisdiction there.
So in Indiana, once you're sworn by the state, basically you have statewide jurisdiction. Oh. So theoretically, I work in five different counties.
Wow. And your chief's okay with that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You must be pretty successful at it.
Luck?
There's no such thing as luck.
Yes, there is.
There's no such thing as coincidence. Things happen for a reason. That's because you're out there doing your job.
I guess preparation meets opportunity, but it's a lot of luck. Right place, right time.
Yeah. You can say, I really don't believe in luck, but it's your interview, so we'll go with it.
Sounds good.
So that leads me to a question. Let's say you make a money seizure. Who gets the assets? Does that go to your city if you're in somebody else's county, or how does that work?
So it depends. Like if we work very close with the feds. So like if the feds are going to take it, then it's coming. They take whatever portion, and eventually some comes back to my city. If it goes stateside, the county gets some, the state gets some, and then our city gets some. So it kind of just depends on which avenue that the asset forfeiture goes. But even if I'm in a different county, eventually the city gets some benefit to it.
Are you on a task force?
I was on it's called domestic highway enforcement, but it's not a task force. We're not like, basically it's just giving guys, that's where I started at, overtime money, to go out there and work, but there's not necessarily like a task force. It's not like, recently there was another initiative that came out, and it was, I think it's Operation Choke Point or something, where I get overtime money from the feds to go do it.
I have a good friend that works in that domestic highway enforcement in Washington. He's a retired North Carolina trooper, Tim Cardwell.
I love him. Love him to death.
He's fantastic, isn't he?
I tried to get him on my podcast, and he said that he would not do it.
Really?
He said he did one podcast, and he's, most interdiction guys like don't like coming on and talking about it, but I tried. I talked to him maybe a week ago, and he wasn't having it.
You know what podcast he came on? Mm-hmm. Game of Crimes.
Mm-hmm. He told me. I'm aware.
Oh, yeah. I love that guy.
He's great.
Just so many good stories about him. And I would look him up here on my master list, but it'll take me a while to find him. Just his name is Tim Cardwell, Cardwell, if you want to listen to his episode. Just one of the most humble, gentlest giants that you'll ever meet.
He's tall. He's tall as can be.
He's a big boy. He's a big North Carolina boy. He's a North Carolina trooper. He had a canine at one time who actually saved his life when the traffic stopped. The bad guys pulled a gun on him. The canine came out of the car, and that caused the bad guys to run. But that boy didn't need a dog. He could sniff drugs out on his own. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, we're in middle North Carolina. I'm stationed in Greensboro, North Carolina. And they're not running 95, which is on the east side of the state. They're running, was it 85 that comes mm-hmm. up through mid North Carolina there? And then I-40 would come across, but they pretty much focused on 85 and just killing it. What a great guy.
Yep.
So when you mentioned DHE, that's what brought that to mind here. So when we were setting up your interview date and time here, do you have specific days of the week and hours of the day that you work, or do they pretty much leave it up to you?
I'm afforded a lot of flexibility. Since interdiction kind of is taken off in my area, there's a lot of people that work it. It's not that I don't want to work with these people, but I also like realize if I was a smuggler and I saw 30 squad cars sitting in the median at particular times a day, I wouldn't leave Chicago during those, so I kind of just move my schedule along. And as long as I'm getting my hours in, that's all the administration really cares about. I keep a, track of all my hours. I log all my hours. The computer logs them all for me too. Mm-hmm. As long as I'm getting my hours in and I'm being productive, they're good with it.
What rank are you right now?
I'm a sergeant.
Okay. So you answer to a lieutenant?
Yeah, we used to be captains. They just did some restructuring. Yeah, but now it's a lieutenant.
Doesn't really have anything to do with anything. Just letting everybody know I know what ranks are. That's being goofy here. At some point in your interdiction, where you didn't start out with a canine, did you? You were just by yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 2014 or 15, I got my first canine. And then in 2016, I was assigned to the highway from part-time to full-time. My administration, I guess, found some value or whatever it was in me being up there. So they created a position for me. It was pretty, pretty amazing, pretty humbling looking back and thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Your agency sounds like a good place to work.
Yeah. Well, my first 6 years, I had six different chiefs. And then since then, I've had two chiefs, and both of them are absolutely amazing. Both of them were great. But the first 6 years, I was so new, I didn't realize all the turmoil. But yeah, looking back, that was happening now is the amount of time I have on. And you didn't know what direction the PD was going. I couldn't imagine some of the older guys during that time.
Whew, that's a lot.
Yeah, you tell me.
Were they bringing outsiders in, or were they trying to promote them through the ranks?
Through the ranks.
Just wasn't working.
And so when I got hired in October, and we had a new mayor take over. So that was one chief. He placed a chief in there for about a year and then removed him. New chief for about a year, removed him. Temporary chief for 6 months. And then there was a vote of no confidence at the PD. And then his assistant chief took over for 6 months. And then finally we got one of the better chiefs that we've had.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Do you think at some point in your career you might want to be a chief someday? Yeah, not anymore.
Unless I have, because they say the lifespan of a chief is about 3 years. Unless I knew I was leaving after those 3 years, I don't know if I'd want to do it. All right, cool. You don't like me anymore. I'm out retiring, but I don't know.
I mean, at least like my DEA partner, Javier Pena, and I, we promoted up to the highest ranks of DEA. We were both special agents in charge. Never had any inkling that either one of us would do that. But there's still politics. There's not as much, though, in local life, I guess. Because the mayor wants to be the one telling everybody what to do, and they do have some certain amount of power, or city manager, whatever it might be, and the board of directors for the city. And you get a little bit more autonomy, I think, within the feds than you do the state and locals.
Yeah, I could see that. Makes more sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, we still got our jerks just like everybody else. But honestly, I've already said I prefer working state and locals. Honestly, I don't think that we had as many jerks in the feds as I've seen in other agencies. But you got to stand in somebody's shoes for a while to know the inner workings of what's really going on out there.
For sure.
So your first dog now, did you have any say-so what it was going to be? Or
no clue. No.
Did the city buy the dog?
Let me think about it. I'm not positive about that, to be honest with you. So our canine unit has created its own nonprofit, and we do fundraisers and those types of things. Like, the city has to give us a certain amount of stuff based on federal law, but a lot of our dogs' training and equipment is paid through that nonprofit. So it's kind of self-funded. I can't say yes or no. I know my second one the city paid for, but I don't know about the first one.
Yeah. Well, and the reason I ask is because you know better than I do how expensive they are.
Yeah.
Between the buying the dog and training the dog and paying you as the handler, it's tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the first dog, I think, was $10,000. What's nice is we have a trainer and a master trainer within our unit. So they don't have to outsource it, but what they have to do is give us that time on the back end for me and that trainer to be off work for a certain amount of time. So there's still money involved. It's just... Mm-hmm. Money that's already allotted for basically manpower that now isn't there, so they have to backfill that somehow.
And the training never stops with the dog. It's not like you train them and then they're good for the for the next 10 years, right?
No, yeah, we train weekly, at least 4 hours a week.
We've had quite a few canine officers come on here, and it's always the same. There's an organization. We had a lady come on here named Christy Schiller, lives down in Texas, near Houston. She saw on TV news where a canine was killed in the line of duty down there. This is several years ago. Christy and her husband are, they're well-to-do financially. I think he's in the oil business down there. So she decided she was going to do something. She started a nonprofit called Canines for Cops. Now, I haven't talked to Christy. We swap messages on Facebook or texts every once in a while. She's a hoot. She's a former Playboy Playmate model. Just fun to hang out. Well, I've never gotten to hang out with her, but just always doing something funny, but always helping other people is the cool thing about her. The last time I spoke to her, she has donated over 300 dogs to law enforcement in the United States. And that clause includes buying the dogs and paying for the training as well.
Wow. So that's impressive.
For something for you guys to keep in mind, Canines for Cops. So it's Canines, the number four, and Cops. And our listeners, if you want to check them out, I mean, it's fantastic. She was on the, there's a black talk show host, big guy. He's funny. Used to have a big mustache. I see his face. I just can't remember. He's originally from West Virginia, where I went to high school and college. But she was on his show, and they actually honored her. She didn't know it was going to happen. A bunch of the canine officers came with their dogs and surprised her on the show.
Very cool.
Man, I can't remember his name now. Good guy, man. He's a comedian, but the things he does on there are very motivating. She also started another thing called Canines for Kids, where they put dogs into schools now. Just a resource that you might keep in the back.
That's awesome.
You never know.
Is it like a service, like a therapy type dogs then?
No, they're trained police dogs, everything from pack dogs to sniffing drugs. And the ones that they put in the school are for explosives and guns.
Nice. Okay.
I don't even know if they train those to be attack dogs, but I mean, hats off to Christy, man. She's fantastic. Your first dog, what kind of dog was it?
A Dutch Shepherd.
And did they get it locally or did it come internationally?
Internationally and then through what they call them. But it came from overseas to Florida, then up to us.
Yeah. Was it still a puppy back then?
I got him. They told us he was 15 months old, but when he's come from overseas, who knows?
Yeah. You didn't know you were going to have a test today, did you?
Making me think about this stuff now.
Testing your memory. I think canines are just a great topic to talk about. It's amazing the things they do and the commitment that the handlers have to make to keep the thing working.
It's. I mean, I love interdiction, but as far as rewarding, watching, it's almost like a kid watching him the growth and then watching him do things on their own. So that's super rewarding. You go through all this training, you get frustrated and you have all these ups and downs or whatever, but then you get to see the finished product or quote unquote, the finished product. And then he's doing what you've asked him to do through repetition and just watching him do it on his own. It's always like, I don't know, just real rewarding.
Yeah, it is. It's always amazing to watch him work. Sometimes I like to be inside my car while I'm watching him work because I don't want him to bite me. But you remember your first dog's name?
Mojo.
Mojo.
Mm-hmm.
What language did you speak to him?
Dutch, I think.
Was it? Of course, you grew up speaking Dutch, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, it makes sense if you think about it, because if somebody else shouts, who's going to know a Dutch command when you're dealing with street thugs out there, right?
Yeah, we made Mojo bilingual, so the stuff that he didn't know, we just kind of went with the English stuff after that. But but he knew both, like some things in Dutch and then some things in English.
What was his specialty? Was he a chase dog?
Just narcs. Just narcs.
Narcs.
Oh, yep, okay. Strictly narcs.
Not an attack dog or?
Nope.
Oh, okay. And so here we are in 2025. How many dogs have you had?
Two. I'm on my second one.
Oh, that's all. And what kind of dog is this one?
The biggest lab you've ever seen in your life.
A lab, really?
He's huge. He's like 85 pounds. He's like solid muscle. He looks like a tank.
Is it black or chocolate?
Black. They told me that he would only weigh 70 pounds max, and then he just keeps growing, so I don't know. He looks like he's on like TRT or something. He's jacked.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What, do you work him out hard, or he's just naturally like that?
He was naturally like that. I mean, he just kept growing. So when I got him, he wasn't this big, but he doesn't have an off button. So every day I take him to run 20 minutes before work and 20 minutes after, just sprints. And I don't know if that helped him get these huge shoulders and stuff or what, but he's a big boy.
You have to send me a picture of him so I can put him on here and everybody can see.
All right. That
works. What's this dog's name?
Gibby. Gibson. Gibby.
And what is Gibby trained to do? Narcotics also?
Yep. Strictly narcs.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a lab as a chase dog or a search dog. Maybe a search dog. But...
Yeah. Well, I guess track. We've some tracking. I don't know if they have the temperament to bite people, but we've kind of messed around and had him biting like the sleeves and stuff, but he just thinks it's a big tug toy. He doesn't realize it.
Yeah. What is his tug toy? What is it that he works for?
A ball.
Just a ball? Just
I mean, yeah, like, or... yeah, there's a, I don't have one either. There's, it's a big round, but it's all rubber. So it's not like, because his jaws are so big, so he can't like destroy this. It's about, almost looks like a rubber shot put, if that makes sense. And then that's, yeah, that's what it is.
It's amazing that you see these dogs, they're so aggressive. And then when they're done, all he wants is that chew toy.
That's it.
That's just so amazing. I don't know why. Just you look at the thing, and it looks like a little monster running around there.
It's have funny. You, oh,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, my, our master trainer said, I wish I could find cops that would work for a tennis ball. Like, various, it's true.
I bet every administrator in the world says that.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, no, nah, we're a little more picky than that, aren't we?
Yeah, a little bit.
And just so our viewers here know, now, when you finish a shift, you just leave him at the station and you go home to yourself, right?
No, he's with me not 20.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be as facetious when I say
yeah, I know.
But it's I mean, it's a commitment. It's a lifelong commitment. I don't know if you're married now, have children.
Yeah, married. No kids.
Yeah. And so your spouse has to be willing to put up with that as well, because you got dog hair on everything and he's got to get up and go pee in the middle of the night.
That's my job anyway. So, it's a little inconvenience, I guess, for my wife, but yeah, my retired dogs lives at home with us, so she has to deal with him during the day. Yeah, wow. So we have three dogs: her dog, and then retired Mojo, and then Gibson. It's they're all big boys and a big girl. Wow. Yeah,
so you guys really can't go on vacation or anything, can you?
It's hard. We have to board them, and I feel bad boarding our dogs. And then our girl dog is so needy. She, like, needs interaction. So we'll usually have, like, a friend come stay at the house with her, because she, like, boarding life doesn't work for her, because she's babied, and she just needs interactions with people. She's such a lovable dog. And when we board her, even the people that board the other two were like, Sadie's miserable here. You guys got to find something else. We feel bad for her.
Yeah. Well, anybody that's a pet owner knows they are like your children. Even when you have children, your pets are still like more children. We had a cockapoo that was the best dog we've ever had. Her name was Molly, and just friendly, outgoing. And we moved to Florida. Connie and I moved down here 3.5 years ago, and her kidney was failing. We already had her in the hospital for like a week, which cost as much as a human hospital. Yeah. And that's coming out of your pocket. It was amazing how much money we spent trying to help Molly out, but eventually had to put her down, and it was just so.
Yeah. I'm dreading those days. Mojo had two surgeries already, but now he was about 3 years old, 4 years old. He had a heart murmur, and mm-hmm. we had to take him down to Purdue University, and they fixed that. And then shortly after he retired, he tore one of his ACLs, so we had to go have ACL surgery. And then recently, he tore his other one, but at his age, the vet's like, if he toughs it out and can get through like the soreness mm-hmm. and his stability doesn't lose that much stability, we're not going to do it on the second back leg. But
yeah,
he's a war. Like, I don't know. He's just a tough old man.
Yeah. I love him, man. I mean, they're like, I love the fact now that, and I don't know if it's like this in Indiana, I'm guessing that it is, that they are actually recognized as sworn law enforcement officers.
Yeah. And they passed a law a few years ago too. Like our medics, I assume we weren't allowed to transport them on, but if our dog gets hurt in the line of duty, the medics can transport them in the ambulance now.
Good. These dogs, well, I'm saying things and I'm preaching to the choir here, because you're the one with all the experience, but I mean, they're risking their lives for you every day. It's just as dangerous for them, if not more so, especially the dogs that you send out to search for people.
Yeah. 100%.
You send them in a building, you never know what you're going to run into. Oh, let's see what else we got up here. So what else is required? You know what? Just give us an idea of a week being a canine handler. What's required to keep your dog and to keep it in shape and trained and all that?
So theoretically, by I think federal standards, you have to maintain 4 hours a week, or comes out to certain, I think it's 16 hours a month of training. So that's allotted in our work schedule, where we have to go train for those 4 hours. But that's not all we do.
I talked about every day before and after work, 20 minutes of running. Mm-hmm. That's not even all we do. You know, when I'm on the highway, I'll pull off. I know where there's specific areas that I could take him to let him go run around a little bit. Early when he's learning how to find narcotics, like every day I'm putting out narcotic hides, letting it sit for, you know, 20, 30 minutes and then going. So I can't leave because I can't leave the drugs out.
Right.
So therefore you're sitting there for 20 or 30 minutes, letting the drugs set, and then you're running your dog around them. As they get a little bit older, you don't need that much repetition. I mean, if you have an issue or something, then you're going to have to, you know, figure out what the issue is and then fix it. But as long as your dog's still maintaining proficiency, then you don't necessarily have to do it as much. Early on, I lay that foundation. I want that foundation to be the strongest foundation in the world. So if there is something that comes back later on where there's an issue, I know that the foundation is good and it's one small tweak that I have to fix and not go back to square one and do it all over again. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I mean, you're looking, I don't even know how much time, 4 hours. You're probably looking at 3 hours a day plus that 7 hour day. I mean, you're looking at, I mean, I don't know, lots of hours tied into the, yeah, for sure.
Does your dog sleep in the house with you?
Yep.
Does the dog's temperament change between when it's off duty and it's on duty?
Mojo did. Gibby doesn't. Gibby doesn't have an off switch. So when he's at home, he might jack around for a little bit and kind of play, but he needs something to stimulate him to keep his mind. He's got like ADD or something like me, kind of like something to stimulate his mind. Or he's like, I'm going to find something to stimulate my mind, like chewing on your couch if you don't give me something to do. Yeah. So he's one that doesn't have an off button. If I put him in the kennel outside, which is kind of, it's more of like a run when the weather's nice, that is kind of his off area. He knows that I can chill out here. Or at night when I have him loose, when he wants to go to bed, he just literally goes to the kennel himself and lays down. And he knows that's his safe spot where he doesn't have to go and look for drugs. He doesn't need to have a ball or a toy. But yeah, most of the time he needs something to stimulate his mind unless he's in one of those two particular areas.
So being a canine, not just a canine officer, but having a canine, police canine, is a 24/7, 365 job, isn't it?
Yeah, no doubt about it.
It's amazing. We've had other canine officers on here, and I think it was Tim was talking about, because he had a shepherd, and I've seen pictures of the dog, but he had kids at home, and he said that when he took his uniform off, the dog knew it was time to play. It's family time. But as soon as Tim put his uniform back on, the dog was all business. The kids knew not to mess with the dog at that point because he's ready to go to work. Just
yeah,
extremely intelligent.
A lot of our dual purpose dogs are very similar to that within our unit. So the guys that have them are very family oriented dogs. But then when I see them on the street, it doesn't make sense. But because of how intense they are. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, all but one live in the house with their families.
How many dogs does your agency have?
7.
Wow, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Any of them Belgian Malinois?
Yeah, we have a few.
Are they psycho?
That's the one I was talking about specifically. I was thinking about it. He lives at home with his family in the house, but then you see him and he's crazy, crazy intense. Like, it doesn't make sense.
It seems like that's a theme throughout that breed.
Dutch Shepherds are very similar in their temperament.
Is that right?
They're just different paint job, basically. Like they look exactly the same, except they're brindle, where Mals are more of a tan color, solid, maybe a black face or something.
Yeah. We went on, it just reminded me, I work on another project we call the Lost Clipper. And we're looking for 15 Americans that disappeared in 1938 over in the South Pacific in Micronesia. And so I've been with a team over there twice. They've actually made 5 trips. I made the last 2. And the last one, we took cadaver dogs. And we found evidence.
Wow.
Which is the first time we've ever found evidence. But anyway, these 2 dogs are shepherds. And it was amazing to watch the handlers. They're from Texas. Both these gentlemen have day jobs, but they work for a group. And of course, the name of the group slips my mind right now. But they're all volunteers. And I think they have some GoFundMe pages that help pay for the dogs or something. So that it's not like somebody's paying them. And they do everything from searching for everything. But for them to fly from Texas to the country of Chuuk, believe it or not, if you ever heard of Truk Lagoon, that was the Japanese Pearl Harbor back in World War II. It's supposed to be the best wreck diving site in the world because of all the sunk ships and planes and different things over there. But to fly over, we all flew on United. And I mean, these dogs needed first class, and we chipped in because these guys were volunteers. So we the rest of the team chipped in to pay for their first class and all that stuff. The treatment that they got on the way over was unbelievable. Nobody, no person has ever been treated as good as the airline employees treated those dogs.
I bet.
They were fantastic, man. It was, we got them out there. We had, it was April of last year we were over there, I think it is. And it was hot. We're in the high 90s. The humidity is almost 100% every day. We've got to take boats 45 minutes to get to this island. We had to take big kennels because they're big, full-grown shepherds. We had to take fans. We had to take a generator. We had to take electrical cores. We took bags of ice, and we put the ice in the kennels for them to lay on. And of course, they didn't go at the same time. They went one at a time. And we babied the heck out of those dogs. But when we put them out there, the first dog was less than a minute. His alert is to lay down. And he alerted in less than a minute. And then they walked him around the area, and we flagged everything. Then take him up so the other dog can't see him. Bring the second dog down, and he alerts on the exact same spots. It's just I know that's got nothing to do with you, but it's just phenomenal what these canines can do.
They have tons of potential. It's amazing. It really is.
It really is. So, Kenny, we've been going here for a little while, and I'm going to call a close to today's session. But everybody, you want to come back tomorrow because we're going to get into Kenny's stories, some of the things he's done with canines. I'll shut up. I won't talk as much on tomorrow's episode, and I can't help it. I love talking to cops, and I'm probably never going to change. But I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you're an animal lover, you definitely want to come back and hear tomorrow's episodes on what the capabilities of Kenny's dogs are and some of the success stories that he's had. I'm going to talk about some other things he's involved with, especially his teaching career. It's probably not a real career, but it is kind of. So until tomorrow, thank you for joining us again today. Until tomorrow, be safe out there. God bless. We'll see you then.